To charge a citizen with a crime, you must have some evidence. Hernandez said, a citizen can be detained for questioning without being charged. Rafael, Dan said, deliberately turning familiar and informal, do you have any idea of how many judges in this city are very close friends of mine? Would you want to cause a conflict with some of the most powerful men in Caracas, simply because this Russian paranoid thinks I'm responsible for his own problems? Malik glared at Dan. Think about it for a moment, Dan urged smoothly. He has absolutely no evidence that I or anyone else at Nueva Venezuela had anything to do with his losing an ore carrier. Think of how foolish you would look if you allowed the Russians to dictate to you, and powerful men in the government decided that you had acted wrongly. Hernandez straightened in his chair. His chin rose a notch. He reached across the desk to the silver cigarette box, took out a long, slender cigarette wrapped in light brown paper, and lit it with a palm-sized laser lighter. Both the box and the silver-plated lighter had been gifts from Dan Randolph. Through all this, no one in the room said a word, and Hernandez's eyes never left Dan's. You place me in a very awkward position, Senor, he said at last, blowing a thin cloud of gray smoke toward the high paneled ceiling. I've done nothing at all, Dan replied, holding up his hands in a gesture of innocence. I've merely come to your office when you asked me to. You have stolen the property of the Soviet Union, Malik insisted. Prove it, said Dan. Malik took a step toward Dan, who tensed in his chair, ready to spring at the Russian. But Hernandez put his arm out and held Malik back. We must all control our tempers, Hernandez said. Dan grinned at the infuriated Russian. This isn't the workers' paradise, you know, where you can throw a man into jail and torture him into confessing. That is quite enough, Senor Randolph. Hernandez's nostrils flared angrily. You go too far. Shrugging, Dan got to his feet. If you want to detain me for questioning, naturally, that's your privilege. Otherwise, you are free to go, Hernandez said. I would ask, however, that you do not leave Caracas without letting me know beforehand. Certainly. That includes the launch facility. Of course, Dan agreed. Turning to Weston, still tensely gripping the arms of his chair, he said, Come on, Pete, let's get back to the office. Good day, Senor Randolph, Senor Weston, said Hernandez. Good day to you, Senor Hernandez, Dan said. With a widening grin, he added, And to you, Comrade Malik. May all your days be as beautiful as this one. Malik glared pure hatred at Dan, but his lips curled slightly upward in a cold smile. I look forward to seeing you again, Mr. Randolph, under more pleasant circumstances. Dan arched an eyebrow, wondering what the Russian meant by that. But the only answer he gave was a slight cock of his head. Then he turned and marched out of Hernandez's office with Weston trailing him. As the security guard led them back down toward the main entrance, Weston pulled a handkerchief from his back pocket and mopped his balding brow. Geez, boss, you really like playing with fire, don't you? Why not, Dan said lightly. It's never boring. Lucita was coming into the building through the heavily tinted glass doors as they arrived in the lobby. Recognizing Dan, she took off her sunglasses and walked across the echoing marble floor toward him. I thought they would have you in jail by now, she said, true concern in her voice. Dan laughed. Jail? Me? What an absurd idea. But she was totally serious. It is not a joke. My father was furious with you this morning, and Vasily would like to kill you. I know, said Dan. Spreading his arms, here I am, though, all in one piece. Are you still carrying your gun? She asked. No, I left it home. I trust your father. Why should I wear a gun to visit him? Besides, the guards here would have taken it away from me. Lucita glanced at Weston, then stepped slightly away from him toward the wall of the lobby, which was covered with a sweeping mural depicting the advance of Venezuelan technology from Indian hand plows to spaceships plying the starry heavens. The lawyer took her hint. I've got to find a men's room, he told Dan. My kidneys aren't as strong as yours. I'll wait for you here, Dan said. Then, turning back to Lucita, he said, I'm flattered that you're so worried about me. He means to kill you, Lucita whispered. I am certain of it. Your fiancé? She nodded. Vasily hates you. You should have seen him this morning. He frightens me. And your father? How does he feel about all this? He is very angry with you. He is terribly afraid of the Sealy, not for his life, but for his political ambition. You are making things impossible for him.
That's too bad, said Dan.
He will side with the Vasily, you know. No matter what the Russians want to do, he will go along with them.
As long as it doesn't bring him into conflict with his own ambition, Dan pointed out. He can't afford to give in to the Russians at the expense of Venezuela's independence.
He would be much happier if you were dead, Lucita said.
Dan smiled bitterly. So would a lot of people.
Did you do it? Lucita asked.
Do what?
Did you really steal the Russian spacecraft?
His smile turned mischievous. Do you think that I'd commit an act of piracy? Do I look like a pirate?
Lucita's elfin face bloomed into an answering smile.
Yes, I think you do.
You are the only man in the whole world mad enough to do such a thing.
That's hardly a compliment.
What makes you think that I was attempting to compliment you? She said, turning saucy.
He bowed his head. Of course. I should have known better. The daughter of a noble family does not offer compliments to an outlander whom she suspects of piracy.
Lucita giggled. You are insane, and you draw me into your madness.
If I am insane, Dan replied soberly, it's because of the spell that you cast over me.
She grew serious again. You must not speak to me like that. I am engaged to be married. The realization of it struck her. To the man who wants to kill you.
Suddenly it hit Dan, too. He ran out of words. There was nothing left to say.
Pete Weston came striding across the marble floor of the lobby toward them.
The limo's outside, he said.
Dan nodded.
Yeah.
He started to turn toward the door, but he could not tear his gaze away from Lucita's sad, beautiful, dark-eyed urchin's face.
You really mustn't marry him, you know, he said to her, so low he could barely hear it himself.
She said nothing. He started for the door where Weston was waiting for him. Dan, Lucita ran to him, would you come to my home for dinner tonight, with my father and me? Vasily will not be there.
Tonight?
Dan blinked with surprise. Please, I want you to speak with my father, with no one else present. I don't want him to hate you.
He nodded dumbly.
8 o'clock, Lucita said. I will see to it that only the three of us are there.
Sure, he said. 8 o'clock. You can phone me if there's any change.
Yes, of course.
Weston pushed the glass door open, and Dan felt a flood of hot sunlight on his neck and back.
He turned and walked outside, looked back over his shoulder at Lucita standing there watching him, like a fairy tale princess watching a knight going out to face a dragon. The squeal of a car's tires broke the spell. Snapping his head around toward the noise, Dan saw a black compact car swinging up the driveway in front of the building. He could see two men in the front, one bent tensely over the steering wheel and the other leaning partway out the window on the passenger side, holding a blocky, bulky, gray metal box in his two hands. Before Dan could react, a pencil-thin beam of searing red light lanced through the morning air from the metal box. Straighter than any arrow, it caught Pete Weston in the left eye and nearly sawed off the entire top of his skull before it winked out. The car roared away as Weston sagged to the cement paving and tumbled down the steps to the feet of Dan's waiting chauffeur. Dan stood frozen, his mind a blank, his body unable to move. No blood came from the lawyer's wound. Pete just lay there, arms and legs sprawled awkwardly in death. The chauffeur dropped to his knees, far too late to protect himself from any weapon that might have been aimed at him. Dan found the strength to turn and look back at Lucita. Through the tinted glass door, he could see that the horror on her face was matched by his own reflection. Chapter 29
I'm going to kill that son of a bitch, and I don't care who knows it.
Dan said the words calmly, quietly, to the image of Saito Yamagata kneeling on a woven straw tatami mat, fists on knees, face set in a grim scowl.
You must remember, Yamagata said, that I cannot guarantee the security of this transmission.
Dan was sprawled on a sofa in his own living room, wrapped in a sky-blue terry-cloth robe, his hair still wet from a long hot shower, an open bottle of Jack Daniels on the coffee table in front of him. He had spent almost the whole day with the Caracas police.